You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight. It is our podcast giving you a roundup of some of the top trending business and economics issues in and around the South African economy. And for today, we are talking about that economy. We're going to be talking about some of the issues that are affecting investment in and around South Africa. And also, if you are a South African, perhaps looking to expand your portfolio and you're saying, you know, South Africa is a bit too much for me. Let me take my money out. You know, where can you actually go? Perhaps, you know, just looking at the rand, you know, how can you, you know, structuring some of your wealth and stuff like that. And that's the discussion we're going to be having. In studio, we are pleased to have Andrew Duvenage, who is the managing director of NFB. And they're going to be just giving us just that roundup. They are a wealth management company that does some tax planning, some wealth management, some unit trusts, and stockbroking as well. How are you, Andrew?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me.
Have I given an accurate description of the business?
Yeah, I think that's right. We deal with people's money, structure their portfolios, and deal with the questions that you raise. And it's an interesting space at the moment. Clearly, South Africa is facing challenges. Investors, your clients are anxious, feeling nervous about where we are, what to do going forward. And that's really the role that we play, is to sit down, understand the needs of those people, what it is that they need to achieve, and then try and come up with solutions. And it's pretty dynamic because no two people are alike. You might be of the same age, same LSM, if you want to call it, but you might have very different orientation towards risk, your future planning, etc. And that's where we step in and try and provide guidance.
So what type of conversations are you having at the moment, I guess, as a firm, and I guess with clients just around the rand? Let's start with the rand, which I think for a long time has been seen as a bit of a barometer for what's going on in the country. Whenever something happens, there's usually a bit of reaction, even though sometimes a lot of it happens outside. So where are we at the moment?
So I think that's a really good point. But to start with, the experience that we're having with clients is one of anxiety at the moment, of concern as to, is the political situation going to right itself and provide the guidance needed to this economy so that the economy can start coming right and we can start dealing with social issues in the country? So there is concern around that. There's a lot of discussion around whether people should be diversifying, taking money offshore. But the rand is, for lack of a better term, it's the wild child of emerging market currencies, in that it's either the best performer or the worst performer of emerging markets. The challenge, though, is that I think South Africans are quite myopically focused on South African factors in relation to the rand. And it's almost the assumption that the political and economic environment over here and the decisions that are made are the primary driver of rand movement. And in many cases, that's actually not true. South Africa is a highly traded currency. It probably boxes above its weight in terms of its importance in the global context. And we can unfortunately be the beneficiary or the casualty of global factors. So things like trade wars, things like global interest rates, global growth, Brexit type of issues, the Trump phenomenon and his devastating tweets late at night. And those type of things can have a disproportionate effect on South Africa. So it's almost that affects global risk appetite. And that global risk appetite causes a tide of money globally. And we can be a casualty of it. So the political and the local circumstance can be positive and we could still see rand weakness, or you could see things not working out so well over here and the rand strengthens. So one has to be aware of that and not just focus on the local factors, because as a South African, it's understandable. We're getting beaten up by bad news, Zondo Commission outcomes, revelations of corruption, malfeasance, all of those type of things. But there is a global context, and we need to consider that as investors and as managers and advisors.
So how do people actually then, in such a situation, protect themselves? You know, if Trump decides to sneeze and it and it affects the rand, how do you actually, you know, protect yourself against that?
Well, I think that for us, the concept of diversification is massively important. You know, South Africa as an economy represents less than 1% of the global economy. It's less than 1% of the global market if you were to aggregate it. So if we were sitting on the moon and my advice to you was put 95% of your money into that little triangle on the bottom of Africa, as you'd probably say, you're crazy. What about everywhere else?
Yeah.
So the concept of diversification is key, and we believe that. Where one needs to be careful is if you think that that's a silver bullet to everything. And when one takes these binary positions, an all or nothing position, that's when there's risk, because it can work against you. So somebody who takes their entire portfolio offshore, that's all fine and well until there's a resolution on trade issues, the Trump dynamic starts to maybe calm down, Brexit is resolved, and suddenly emerging markets are back in favor and the rand strengthens and you are on the wrong side of that trade. So we do believe in the concept of diversification. We do believe in the concept of understanding the risk tolerance of individual clients. So when you have a younger client or individual who has a long-term time horizon, can bear out the volatility of the inevitable market ups and downs, that's very different for someone who's very close to retirement, who doesn't have that time horizon or that luxury. And it's understanding those dynamics that's key to building a portfolio that makes sense and will work for clients and provide that protection. But in saying that, your question is a good one, is the craziness of like the Trump effect and the tweets that I jokingly refer to make things very, very difficult to plan against. Markets are at levels which are high. Valuations are stretched overseas. And so the question we often get from clients is, okay, fine, have decided to take money overseas, but what do we put it in? Interest rates are virtually null. Equity markets are extended. How do we invest? And I wouldn't lie to you and say that that's not a challenge in terms of structuring portfolios.
I think when it comes to, you know, currencies, you know, for a moment, I want you to talk to us about perhaps, because when I think of the rand, I'm usually thinking of it in relation to, at least from a trading point of view, usually thinking about it in relation to some of the big ones, rand dollar, rand euro, rand yen, maybe rand sterling. What are some of the maybe unusual currency pairings with the rand that people might not be aware of that, you know, seem to be popular at the moment?
From an investment point of view, you don't find a huge amount of divergence away from the major major currencies. So as you correctly cite, the dollar, sterling, the British pound, the euro, the yen is more on a trade basis as opposed to an investment basis. And then, funnily enough, the Aussie dollar as well. And that's quite natural in that there is a link from an immigration perspective where a lot of people might choose to almost hedge and to be in a specific currency where they feel might be a destination of opportunity for work or those type of things. What's very interesting, though, is the perception is that the rand has been significantly weak for a significant period of time. Against the dollar, that's true. The average weakness of the rand since the early 90s is probably about 4-4.5% per annum, with huge vacillation around that. So periods of significant weakness or significant strength. But against the pound over the last 5 years, is the rand is virtually flat. Against the Aussie dollar, last 5 years, rand is virtually flat. Minimal weakness against the euro as well. And that talks to, there are dynamics that affect those markets too. So as much as we beat ourselves up about what's going on here, make no mistake, if you're British and trying to deal and understand with this Brexit dynamic, that's also a crazy type of space. And those economies and currencies have been battling too. The US dollar has been strong, and what we've learned from the great financial crisis a decade or so ago, and everything that's unfolded since then, is despite the fact that the US was in many ways the architect of the problems that we saw starting 10 or 15 years ago, is the global store of value remains the US dollar. And despite the fact with them being almost the catalyst for these things, when things wobble, money goes back towards US treasuries. Recently, we've seen some appetite for gold. But by and large, is the US dollar is still the global store of value when things get hairy and wobbly. And so you find investment portfolios very often gravitate towards that. But when you look at equity, the other debate in the industry that you have a lot of the time is, if you're investing in equity and you invest in an American company like a Microsoft or a Coca-Cola, whilst those are American listed companies, is their revenue streams are very much globally diversified, and the management teams allocate capital into different regions and different areas.
Mm.
So yes, it might be denominated in that, but it's very much a global play. So very often what you find from an investment strategy point of view is you look for global plays, globally diversified businesses that can switch their capital allocation according to where there is growth, where they think the next thing is coming from.
Yeah.
And that's something we embed quite strongly in portfolios.
Okay. Before we take a break, I want to just touch on something you raised just now, the fact that gold has sort of become a bit popular of late. What do you think of it as an asset class? Either locally, are people locally investing in a lot of gold, whether it's gold directly or maybe ETFs that are doing gold, you know, any exposure to gold, one. And two, I saw something interesting. I don't know either whether you can speak to this or not. And that's the reason the thought came to my head is, with all the sanctions around Venezuela at the moment, I've seen that they've propped up the economy by selling like a lot of gold, you know, onto the international market. And I'm just wondering, who's buying this stuff? Where's it going?
So certainly, I think in the last year or so, as there has been more demand for gold, we've seen that gold price shoot up. It's a challenging asset because it has no yield, it has no economic value per se. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not. You know, probably 5 or 10 years ago, there was a case for platinum as part of a catalytic converter, for example, and therefore there was almost a functional use for it that drove its value. Gold is a strange thing, similar to Bitcoin in many ways, in that what is its functional value at this point in time? But in saying that, I think there are people who are concerned about the sustainability of the U.S. picture. The U.S. now going into a lower growth environment, and the crazy dynamic is that you've got a president, and he's got to be the first president certainly I'm aware of in the developed world and in recent economic history, who has defined his success barometer as the level of the Dow Jones and the S&P 500, right? And so one thing that you can be sure of is going into this election cycle and his fight for his political life is, if that's the measure of his success, is he's going to do everything that he can to prop up that measure of his success.
Mm.
And so we've already started to see the pressure on the Fed, on Jerome Powell, where he's fighting, pushing for interest rates to be dropped. Why does he want that? One, to stimulate the economy, but two, it's good for asset markets. When you have lower interest rates, companies that are sitting on mountains of cash typically buy back their own shares, which pushes up share prices. And similarly, discount rates are lower, which once again props up asset prices.
Yeah.
So, I think there are people who are worried about the sustainability of that. We saw sort of the after effects of the Greenspan era, where he continually dropped interest rates. And the hangover from that was the great financial crisis.
Yeah.
So I think there are people who are saying, whilst the US dollar has been the store of value, is maybe things like gold aren't a bad bet to go into. Because if you're not doing the US dollar, what currency is your currency, your store of value? Now, the Eurozone remains a mess from an economic perspective and hasn't moved forward post the great financial crisis, despite an inordinate amount of quantitative easing and money being pumped into the system. The Brits, I mean, are mired in this. It really is a difficult thing to try and understand. And we spend a lot of time trying to look at the different scenarios. And if you try and map out the potential outcomes of Brexit, is you just get a really messy page with squiggles all over it. It's very, very difficult to understand. So there are people who are saying, if it's not the US dollar, and we don't want to bet on that extensively, as gold could be an alternative. Gold ETFs have been popular. And then I suppose in South Africa, if you look at recent market performances, you have seen the benefit of that coming into certain gold shares, which have been the driver of performance, and I say that in inverted commas, in the recent past on the JSE.
Okay. So we're in studio with Andrew Duvenage, who is the MD of NFB. He's telling us that at the moment the rand is still volatile, but is one of the more highly traded currencies around the world. And a lot of the volatility we're seeing, you know, South Africans should be aware that as much as there's a lot of noise in South Africa, a lot of what feeds into that volatility is what's going on outside of the country, particularly, you know, the Trump effect, the US-China trade war, a lot of geopolitical tensions such as Brexit as well, you know, that are all feeding into that. And also, I think, a slowing global economy as well. So we're just going to take a quick break and then we'll be back after this.
The cryptocurrency revolution is a rabbit hole that goes deeper than just Bitcoin and blockchain. South Africa's revolutionary cryptocurrency investment platform, Revix, presents Beyond Bitcoin, your guide to the crypto future. Unpack the news, trends, and terminology live every Monday on The Gareth Cliff Show on cliffcentral.com. You can also download every episode on the Cliff Central app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is the Business Day Spotlight. We are in studio with Andrew Duvenage, who is the MD of NFB. And just before the break, we were just talking a lot about the rand, about, we also touched a lot about gold and how it's become a bit of a popular investment vehicle for people that are trying to maybe diversify outside of the US dollar, and some of the risk factors around the global economy, the US, China, Brexit, all of that. But right now I want to shift to, because just before the break, you know, you've painted quite a dire picture of what's going on, you know, in the global economy. But there is a trend at the moment of South Africans trying to move their money offshore. So how does all of what we were talking about before the break feed, you know, into that? And what can South Africans actually invest in, you know, especially given, you know, that picture?
Well, the first thing is one needs to understand that offshore investment is not necessarily correct for everyone.
Mm.
And I think one of the challenges that we're facing at the moment is that it's almost being sold as a panacea, a silver bullet to investment needs. And it's being exacerbated by the fact that returns locally have been low.
Oh, okay.
So when you see people in retirement, for example, they're drawing on their portfolios, they haven't seen great levels of return for an extended period of time now, the temptation is to look at offshore assets, for example, but inadvertently they might be increasing risk inside their portfolio. So the first thing is that you've got to understand that dynamic is it's not necessarily for everyone. The other point which we touched on earlier is one needs to be careful of thinking that this is a one-way bet that can't move in the other direction. And that's the point that we were discussing around there are also global factors in play, and it can just as easily over a period of time turn and work against you. So we are very much advocates of a more diversified and balanced type of approach as opposed to this binary type of position. So although we paint a dire picture, one has to be pragmatic and honest about where you're at. You have to look at the warning signs and the information that's available to you, but you also don't want to get carried away in fear-mongering and in letting emotion run away with you. And it's an interesting point because we often get asked the question, is there value in South Africa and is there a case for investment in South Africa?
Yeah.
Now, if you look at the JSE as a market, it has underperformed for an extended period of time. This is a market that typically does 15% per year. But over the last 5 years, I think we're lucky if we've got 1.5% per annum. That market, you've seen significant compression in valuations. And in some ways, that provides some protection to investors. It's actually pretty low. There are some quality companies with good dividend earnings, and those will potentially come back. The question is, what is it that unlocks that value?
Yeah.
That really is the million-dollar question. Is it going to come from local sources in the form of economic growth? If you saw, the World Bank came out yesterday, revised our sort of outlook downwards. And I think in this medium-term budget, which we'll see later this month, I wouldn't be surprised if government itself acknowledges that growth is going to be lower for longer.
What has the World Bank revised it down to?
I think it was sub 1%.
Oh, wow. Again.
You know, for the next year. And unfortunately, the reality is, if you look at sub-Saharan Africa, is our peer set are going to be growing at about 3 times that amount. So we really are stuck in this low growth problem. So the value unlock is probably not going to come from significant an upside shock on economic growth as it stands at the moment. It really is either going to come from some decisive policy movements. And I think that's really, as a society, what we're really screaming out for, is we're screaming for and asking for this leadership and this guidance. But we don't have the luxury of time. Is unfortunately the state that we're in at the moment is we need relatively decisive interventions. You know, We can talk for a long time about things like Eskom. Unfortunately, the size and the nature of it is they need to get to grips with it, and sooner rather than later. We can't let this run another 2 or 3 years. It's just not sustainable. So policy certainty and those type of things, absolutely. And then the global picture, as I say, is if we could pick up some tailwinds, as things can re-rate relatively quickly. And, you know, we talk about someone like Warren Buffett is, he always had the saying that when it comes to investment, when people are being greedy, be cautious. And when people are being, when people are scared, is that's when you should be greedy. And maybe in some ways you look at the South African context and an investor with the right time horizon, with the right tolerance, there is potential. There are definitely value opportunities inside the market as it stands at the moment. And that's why, once again, just be careful of taking this this binary type of position of going fully offshore and excluding or ignoring the local market. But one still needs to be pragmatic, is what we say.
Actually, on that particular front of don't exclude South Africa, don't shift all your money offshore, what do you find? Is there a difference between what investors in South Africa, you know, that you are engaging with, investors in South Africa, and perhaps investors outside of South Africa trying to invest in South Africa, is there a difference in the type of concerns that they have about the country?
Unfortunately, the honest answer is there isn't a huge amount of appetite for South African investment at the moment. And the reality is one just needs to look at the participation and the flows of money from foreigners on the JSE and on the bond market. And unfortunately, those have been negative at the moment. And it does make sense, because in a low growth environment, there are probably other economies and opportunities which represent better growth prospects.
Yeah.
So as it stands at the moment, the desire for that is not there. But it's not to say that South Africa is dead and buried. I mean, if you look at the recent transaction with Pioneer Foods, with PepsiCo coming in and buying that was a statement of intent for them to access sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah.
What South Africa has in its favor is we have a highly sophisticated financial services sector, highly liquid and efficient market. There are still a lot of things which are in our benefit as an access port into the rest of Africa, which is a hell of a lot harder to invest in. And we could still see that come back. But I think the challenge in coming back to policy once again is what investors locally and globally are looking for is certainty. Markets like certainty. They don't like uncertainty. And so when there are discussions around things like prescription of assets, when there are these uncertain rules of play, whether it's inside the mining sector or those type of things, is that's not well received by markets. And I think the own goal that we are scoring at the moment is that those are things that can be addressed with a degree of policy certainty. So we saw yesterday David Masondo, who's the Deputy Finance Minister, was some quite remarkable things and almost refreshing things that came out of his mouth, talking about how potentially a wage freeze in the civil service would be required. Absolutely, it's required. 35% of our budget is spent on civil servants. It's not sustainable, and it's diverting money away from infrastructure and you know those type of projects. But one of the things that he did say is that if we don't do that relatively soon, is the picture will not be able to continue, right?
Yeah.
And the positive thing coming out of that is there does seem to be some sense and sensibility coming out of sectors of government, is the realization is there that the path that we're on at the moment is not sustainable. It's a question of how quickly they can implement that. What was of concern, though, was, he mentioned something like we need to unleash the potential of the pension fund industry.
Yeah.
Now, markets look at a statement like that and they get nervous, quite frankly. Cyril Ramaphosa, when asked in Parliament, probably in mid to late August, around this issue of prescription of assets, and prescription of assets is really turning to the pension fund industry. It's a 4 trillion rand industry, and saying we want a portion of the assets inside there to be directed to specific projects, which are state projects. Now, you can forgive investors for being concerned about that if you look at the track record of state-owned enterprises, the maladministration, malfeasance, corruption that we talk about. And when you have senior people in government Almost creating that uncertainty is it's not well received by markets. And I think if we could get to a point of clarity around some of those issues, is you might find more appetite for South African assets. And the advantage at the moment is, with the South African rand being weak, with growth slowing down in global markets, and with a lot of businesses being at very, very low levels, those have to be attractive, provided that there's an economic platform going forward to work from. Those have to be attractive to foreign investors. So once again, is the situation that we find ourselves in right now is not irreversible, and it's not that it won't change. So will appetite come back from foreign investors? It's absolutely possible. As it stands at the moment, the truth of the matter is it's limited, but hopefully with some good leadership is that can change.
Okay. As we end our discussion, I wanted to, maybe you can talk to us about what you see as being possible growth asset classes for investment and wealth building at the moment. Earlier on, you were talking about the movement away from the US dollar, a little bit of gold, etc. But there's a lot of instruments out there that people can invest in and all that. So, you know, where do you see that going?
Well, I think quality is important. And that's the first thing is, you know, markets always go through cycles. There are always times when it's going to correct and when things look overvalued. But quality assets, proven business models, strong balance sheets, dividend paying ability, I think that is key to any investment portfolio, first of all. Then you can look at different strategies outside that. We've been quite active in structuring investments and products with capital guarantees in them, and then exposure to underlying indices. There's a lot of appetite for that, for people saying, if I'm taking money overseas, is I don't want it to implode. Markets collapse, and do need access to that money, is the capital has been significantly impaired. So they're those type of things, but once again, is not a silver bullet. And then with selective stock picking, I think in the South African market, is there's certainly a case to be made around a number of businesses. The challenge, and I suppose where people are jaded, is low levels of return. And then when you see issues with the Steinhoffs of the world, we saw Tongaat miss their results again the other day. Those type of things don't sit well with investors. They're not in a good space as it is. So, you know, the corporate governance angle is not helping, as people are jaded. But certainly there are opportunities out there. Understanding people's risk profiles and their tolerance of risk, their immediate needs, longer term needs, is absolutely key to this. And where we feel businesses like ourselves add value is to try and sit down and understand what it is that an individual needs.
Yeah.
The problem with generic blanket sort of advice or views is everyone's different, and it doesn't necessarily apply in the same way to everyone. And so people would be well advised to sit down and actually get to grips with what it is that they need, and then build bespoke strategies around that.
So we've been in studio. It's been an interesting discussion with Andrew Duvenage, who is the MD of NFB. Some of the things, some of the takeaways is just the fact that at the moment there isn't a lot of investment appetite now for the South African economy, unfortunately. And also just the fact that the South African economy, the World Bank has revised the GDP growth down below that 1% mark, you know, in an environment where some of South Africa's peers are growing at two or three times, you know, that particular rate. This is all feeding into some very poor investor sentiment at the moment. You know, people looking to, you know, have their money offshore. But he's saying that don't, you know, exclude South Africa if you have the right time horizon, simply because, you know, it's a cycle. And he says that, like any market, things self-correct. And, you know, if you have the right tolerance and invest in, you know, the right thing, perhaps a company that's on the low now, in 5 years, it might actually, you know, be on the up. And then towards the end, he's also just talking about the fact that investors are worried just a little bit and want to see a little bit more policy certainty coming out of the government, and also corporate governance issues in the private sector, you know, have made investments on that particular front a bit tough. So thank you so much. Andrew, is there a newsletter? Do you have Twitter where you are doing commentary? How can people, you know, perhaps get, you know, more access to some of your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. We link through our website, which is nfb.co.za. And we provide views and thoughts on markets, some analysis, and those type of things. And then obviously very keen to engage with people and have conversations.
And then on LinkedIn?
LinkedIn, absolutely, is the company web, or the company LinkedIn page is NFB Private Wealth Management. And then a lot of the individual wealth managers are on there posting views and thoughts. So we'd love to engage with people out there on these type of issues and have a discussion.
How big is your team?
So the team across the country is about 180-odd people. Yeah. We manage around 35 billion rands worth of our clients' money.
Yeah.
Primary focus, individuals, their trusts, some corporate entities around that. We have a presence in Johannesburg, in the Eastern Cape, and in the Cape. So pretty much across the country.
Okay, cool. So that's been us. We've been with Andrew Duvenage, who is the MD of NFB. As he said, you can go to their website if you want to have some of their commentary and visit their LinkedIn, where some of their team actually post some analysis just around some of the issues in the economy. So that's been it for today's episode of Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, you can like, share, subscribe, perhaps share this podcast with someone who might be interested in these issues. On Twitter, our hashtag is #BDSpotlight. Remember that you can also review and subscribe for free to our podcast on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. So remember that the Business Day Spotlight is a multimedia live production. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and from the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.